3 weeks is, and I'm preparing for Tisha B'Av, response to literature from the Holocaust. And some of the literature is quite depressing. And you had people like Rabbi Ephraim Ashri, who was only 27 years old, and when he was poskening shilas that he had never had to think about before, but the Germans, Yimach Shemam, killed out early on many of the great rabbis or older rabbis that they saw. And you have his Mima Makim, and that's a familiar source. And there were many, you know, there were many, many topics that needed answers right away. One topic that I wanted to get into today is the concept of getting married after the war. So here you have women who had been imprisoned. They'd been imprisoned, and whenever people are imprisoned, you have a chashash that they're raped. And here, can they marry Kohanim? Can they return to their husbands? And you can imagine the emotional... Well, this is not working. Okay. Imagine after everything they've been through, then the rabbis had said, okay, you know, you survived. You can't stay married to your husband. You survived. You know, the Kohanim, sorry, Kohanim, you can't marry. You can't get married. You have to, because everybody that is within this eligible pool, they're all survivors, and you can't marry a survivor. So that was the issue that the rabbis dealt with right after the war. And we have tshuvas from the Chalkas Yaakov and the Minchas Yitzchak and the Satmar Rebbe and many others. And what I want to show you is that their attitude was basically, we're going to find a heter here. We're going to find a way out of this. And I think it's an important sugya because I wasn't able to find this in print, but there's a rumor that some rabbis on the left wing of Orthodoxy are using the chumrah in this sugya to mater Kohanim to marry converts, because that's now the hot button issue of today. Really? That if somebody's in love, you know, why can't they marry whomever they want? And that's why some denominations are now accepting, for other reasons as well, they're accepting of intermarriage. But some of it is just they need the numbers, and some of it is that if somebody's in love, would a moral God not allow? And that's part of the hashkafa. But the question is the halachic approach. How do you take a kohen and say he can marry a gioras? Well, the classic way was to say maybe he's not a kohen, and this is something we've discussed here with the tshuva of Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolios about why we don't do birchas kohenim in chutzlaretz nowadays. He suggested, if you remember, maybe how do we know they're kohanim? And he's not the first to say maybe somebody's not a kohen. And especially if somebody has been in a non-from family for many generations and didn't practice, you know, his father never duchened, his grandfather never duchened. He remembers once his father saying something about him being a Kohen, then, and you look at the tombstones and there's no hands on the tombstone, can you do away with kahuna? It's not so pashut. So somebody apparently, and I wasn't able to figure out who it was, but there was stuff on the blogs about this, somebody suggested, here's an idea. If a Kohen has ancestors who were Shoah survivors, then say his father or grandfather wasn't allowed to marry a fellow survivor because she was a Shvuya. A Shvuya is we assume was Niveles La'akum, was raped, and a Kohen would not be able to marry her. Undo the kahuna. So this is, here's some you know, smart young rabbi who thinks, I have a great idea. I'm going to now allow Kohen, millennial Kohen, to marry whomever he wants. What is he really doing? He is now causing, if he had more legitimacy, he would, you know, place scrutiny, questions about whole generations of Kohanim who had based themselves on all the Gedolei HaPoskim and had remarried. So here's the sugya. Let's see if I can find it.
Did this same concept apply to Agunos?
What? DNA? So, this is an interesting question. Can, if we assume that there is genetic material of Kohanim, so that would only hurt us and not help us, because if somebody could prove that he's a Kohen, then in the cases where you were Rav Moshe, among others, was willing in limited cases to question a person's kahuna status, the DNA evidence would throw it off. Yes.
So even if you had DNA,
so the DNA wouldn't help in this case. The DNA would help in the Rav Moshe case.
But even if you know you had genetic, you'd still be a cholo.
Correct.
Same thing apply? All these things apply to the Aguna issue. These women who lost their husbands, or they didn't know what their husbands.
So that's a separate issue. If that's another case that happened, and these were cases that happened that after the war, somebody assumed that their spouse was dead, and you know somebody told them whatever it was, and then the spouse comes back after they got remarried. What do you do? There's a lot of heart-wrenching cases. Again, the Holocaust did not just affect one generation. You know, the emotional and pain goes on for generations, and a lot of these questions just highlight that the Nazis did significant damage in many areas. My wife's grandfather carried, at great risk to his life, he carried a list of the people that he had witnessed who had died. A very long list. And after the war, he made his list public, so that if their wives had survived, they could remarry. There was a whole story that he carried it with him wherever he went. One day he forgot it, and that was the day that he got searched because somebody had told on him. But there were many. I mean, we can pursue some of these cases.
By the way, Eli Pollack, mm-hmm. who is a Kohen, sent out this DNA thing, mm-hmm. came back as a Kohen.
That he is a Kohen.
Came back as a Kohen. Mm-hmm. It came back. The DNA came back with a thing with the hands and all like this. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting. And there's a joke that they tell that a man who had never done well in Europe, he moves to America and he decides, I'm going to have new luck. And he, a famous joke, you know this one?
By Y.Y. Jacobson told it.
Oh, okay. So, okay. He dresses up and he figures if I look different, then they're going to respect me and I'm going to make it in business here. And he goes into shul the first morning and he's dressed all fancy and they're mechabed him. They go up to him, are you a Kohen? And he's thinking, if I'm pretending to be rich, I might as well pretend to be a Kohen. And they give him the first aliyah. And after davening, the Rav, who had recognized him from Europe, from the old community, called him over and said, Beryl, you know, you look like you're doing well, that's great. But I remember you, and I remember your father and your grandfather, and you weren't Kohanim. And he says, and it sounded better in Yiddish, he says, well, in a place where you can pretend to be a Rav, I can pretend to be a Kohen. The sugya begins on Ksubas Daf Chaf Beis. The sugya is that if a woman comes and she says, nobody knows that she was captured. She says, Nishvesi Tahorani, Ne'emenes HaPesha Pesha Hiter. We didn't know that she was captured, and we don't know that she, if she was captured, what happened. But if she's the one who tells us that she was captured, and then she says, but don't worry, I was not raped, then she is mutaras l'kohen. Because if she hadn't said anything, if she had left things alone, we would have allowed her to marry a Kohen, so we believe her. But what happens if Adam come and say, we know she was taken captive, and we assume that if she was taken captive, there was an assumption that she was raped, and she says, no, but nothing happened. They left me alone, Ena Naamenes. She's not believed. Okay?
Is that even coming after she with Moshe? Or what? Is that a different case?
This is a different case. This is a different case. So one thing we were going to have to explore with the Holocaust, this is one, I find this to be the least compelling, but it shows you how far they wanted to go. The Chelkas Yaakov says, are there two Edom that come? And a couple comes before you and says, we want to get married. Did two Edom come and say this woman was captured? Now we see the number on her arm. But he says, no, maybe you need two Edom. And he brings a lot of proofs that maybe you need two Edom. And just because it's Mephorsam is not like two Edom. Now that's a very hard avenue to explore, yeah. but that's what he says. Maybe she was, you know, there were people who were not, who escaped or...
We're hiding.
But it's Mephorsam. Let's say the survivors, usually people know. So is that considered Pashtus and Halacha? That's like two Edom. If something is Mephorsam, but the Chelkas Yaakov is willing to say, no, unless you get those two Edom, then she says she was a survivor.
Here's my question. So yeah. if a woman is asked, is there a piece of meat? Is there a kosher piece of meat? And she says, yes, we believe her, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so why what compels us? Is this because of the Gemara? Or is it why compels
us? If just two Edom come and say this is not a kosher piece of meat, and then a woman comes and says, I think it's a kosher piece of meat, then what would the case
right,
be?
Right, but the
meaning over here,
the question
she says,
is being captured, the question is
once
whether,
she says she was captured, we have an assumption about what happened.
Even if she says
she is going otherwise. What?
Even if she's saying otherwise, she's testifying, I'm a kosher piece of meat. I'm saying.
Correct. But once we have Edom that we assume that this happened. Now,
even though the Nazis, I mean, that was not their main.
Good. So that's going to be the avenue that they explore. Now, when it comes to a woman being Mutaris Labala, you have another Gemara, Ksubas Daf Chavav, that says that if a woman is captured and she's being held for ransom, so if she's being held for ransom, then we assume that they're going to, or we don't assume they're necessarily going to mistreat her. Because they want their money, and they want, especially in a ransom culture, they that good faith is important for them. You know, they want people to know if you come up with the money, you'll get your hostage back in good condition. So then we don't assume anything happened. But if al yidei nefashos, if this is wartime, and they take somebody and they're not interested in the money, they're just trying to cause harm, then Asur Labala. Now, why is she Asur Labala, according to Rashi and Tosos? We assume that she's trying to save herself. If a woman is raped and it's against her will, she can go back to her husband. She's Asur Lakoyim, but she can go back to her husband. But we assume maybe she offered herself to try to buy some time. So maybe it was Liritsona. That's Rashi and Tosos. So...
But even if she would voluntarily do this, this is not Ratzono.
So the question is how to define Ratzon.
Meaning you're
to
save her life.
That's still Ratzon. That's still considered Ratzon according to Chazal. So comes it's much easier with handouts.
Printer's coming next week.
Okay. There's a Chuvas HaRash who says Bishas Hagezera, he says, in a time that offering yourself to them, everybody knew that's not going to save you. That's not going to save you because they're going to kill whomever they're going to kill. So then you don't have that svara. That's going to apply to allow women to stay married to their husbands, and that is muskim in the poskim. So that wasn't an issue. The main issue that the Gedolim discussed is you had, and my wife's great uncle is a Kohen, and he married married a survivor, right? He was a good Hasidish man. Why was he allowed to do that? She was a survivor. She was a shvuya, right? It's a classic ksubas chapez, right? Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezer, Siman Zion. A woman who is captured cannot marry a Kohen. Okay, comes the Minchas Yitzchak, and he says, Osan hanashim shebo b'chazar mimachanos harikuz im dinam kishvuya la osram lekohanim. Okay? His answer is, okay? He says, sometimes you can have testimony of their friends. And in this case, you allow testimony from people who are not usually kosher edim. He says you can have a women testify.
Testifying about what?
It doesn't say about
testifying. Testifying to what? How can you testify?
That they weren't. She was with me the whole time. I was with her.
Okay.
She didn't. So the Minchas Yitzchak says that Rov Pa'amim Yesh Levar Yedei Chavro Seha Im Hi Tahara. But then he says he's not comfortable if their friends are not from. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he says, Hare noda da hagezera haya lahashmid velaharog velo haya moel shum ritzoy mikol shekhan alabila haya onesh rav. He says there were punishments. If a Nazi slept with a Jew, they were punished. Haya neged harasa gezetz. Alright? Av shehem achashvu l'ra Hashem chashvu l'tova. This law that they would have violated is now going to help these survivors. Im ken dami l'gzeras atzra chamuva b'tshuvas harash v'sham haisa gzera la'avor al das dafka im lo haya horgim lo haya moa lehem shum ritza liznus u'kidkasa b'ze b'sefer b'ez hilal al divra rama u'kamuva b'rama ayim b'bir hagra. He quotes a lot of tshuvas that basically say in this type of case, this is not the captive Ladina Nefashos that you assume maybe she would try to curry favor and she would be Asura Labala. No, because it wouldn't have helped. And what about Asura LaKohen? Remember, you have to have, of course there were Nazis who did that, but the question is there an assumption? Can we say there's an assumption if she was captured, then this is what happened? You know, you might have that with Boko Haram. You might have that in certain, but says the Minchas Yitzchak, writing this tshuva in 1946, he says, we don't assume that here, right? Because we don't assume it happened because there's no, right, you have, why are we assuming this happened, right? We don't have Adam that it happened, and obviously she's saying it didn't happen. If she says it did happen, we're going to listen to her. But if she says it didn't happen, because of the law on the books that Nazis were not allowed, then this halacha does not apply. The Satmar Rav, as a tshuva, there's a book of tshuvas that one of his talmidim wrote. He says, Adrab lefiha mishpat haisa mischayevas yoser al zeh ki kol kavanaso shel oso harasha haya lahashmid v'laharog chalila v'dami lenitfasa lahamir ulishas hereg rab de lo chayshinan lenisrat avar hatzala she'en emo elas b'dinam shelo sam chadaita azel lahafkir atzma leznus v'agam deshab b'shas hereg rab lo itir b'shvil zeh ala yisrael b'lo lekohanim yan desham lo haya mirsas klad nishar hachashash de'ones aval kan de mirsas v'lo basi lachash ala mitam chashash de'nisrat hecha deleka chashash she'nisraka z'agam le'ones lo chayshinan. He has a bit of a different svara, but he says that we have no reason to believe that that's what the Nazis were doing. And the Minchas Yitzchak has another tshuva. And here, it's very interesting. Here, he puts together a bunch of sfeikos. He says, number one, maybe our Kohanim are not Kohanim. Right? He starts off with that. So here, Kohen survivor, right, that was usually the case, wants to marry another survivor. So your first question to him, are you a Kohen? How do you know? Now, we don't have anybody who would allow a Kohen, you know, who was a frum Kohen, who was duchening before the war, and his father duchen. We don't have anybody who would say, you can marry a Gioris. You can marry, because he's a Kohen. But we do, remember from that other shir, the Marshtam does say, every Kohen nowadays has a certain element of Suffolk. Right? Nobody has a ksav. Again, the DNA testing might change that. Right? And you wonder, I think I mentioned, this could be in the Shavuot shir, that the Vilna Gaon apparently carried around 5 coins, and anybody who said he was a Kohen, he was a firstborn, and he gave him the coins and said, Pidyon HaBen. Obviously, he didn't make a bracha, And I assume, unless he was a rich man, that the Kohanim usually gave them back. Otherwise, that can be a very expensive endeavor. It's more than $100 nowadays, based on the price of silver. So imagine if every Kohen would get $100 from the Vilna Gaon. But
I was not a rich man.
I don't think so. Although did I mention in that in 1790, when the Grub was taken to jail, there was a whole machlokas in the community. It was the old guard versus the young guard. And the Vilna Gaon, about a Rav who had been appointed, the Vilna Gaon sided with the old guard. The young guard went to the authorities and said that he was not paying proper taxes. He was not officially a licensed rabbi, and he was getting certain perks. They took him to jail. They took him to jail for that, and that was the day that he was trying to reintroduce Berchas Kohanim. So they did suggest that he had money that was not meant for him, because the community did support him. So comes the Minchas Yitzchak and says, we're not going to allow a Kohen to marry somebody he's not allowed to marry, saying you're not a Kohen. But we do have lurking this suffix status. Every Kohen has a question whether or not he's a Kohen. Now, it's funny, when I did Opinion of Ben for my Bechor, I spoke to a posik and I said, should I look for somebody who claims he has, yichus? And the posik I spoke to said no, because nobody has real yichus, and there's an element of hotzas laz. If you specifically don't want to use a Kohen because maybe he's not a Kohen, because this guy has better yichus, then that's like an insult to Kohen A. Which is a bit pushing it, because I don't have to use any specific Kohen. But it's an interesting sensitivity, that when you look for higher standards, what are you saying about all the quote-unquote lower standards, or the people who don't have... So would we nowadays say to every Kohen, do a DNA test? And what would we do? How certain is it? If somebody wants to marry a Gioras and says, I did a DNA test and I came back that I'm not a Kohen, right? Would that be enough? So these are new issues to think about. I don't know.
How does it work?
I mean, there was a certain
gene. You do a swab, and they send it out.
What was the original? Where did they get the original?
How did they know? They just
did they get the original?
Did they pull
Aaron Cohen? They did a swab on Aaron.
Large number of Cohen, and there's a common gene that they had
that other people didn't know.
There was a Kohen here, a very prominent person here in town who claimed to be a Kohen, and he was Didn't have been for many, many children. Went to make Aliyah here at Yisrael and found out that he was not a Kohen.
Oh my gosh.
He went to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish told him that he had to go back and find every kid, and they had to repoke the kids by a different Kohen.
Oh my gosh.
That's one comment I had. Mm-hmm. The second comment, those shulas that you have, Rabbi, are interesting, because yes, the Nazis had the law, but there were many women that were hiding in the woods, and Polish men. There were many Polish men, Polish, what do you call them?
Partisans,
thank you, who did rape a lot of the women.
Right.
That was a lot of a real problem. So
the question is, though. But if it's just a suffix and she says it didn't happen, then we're fine. If it's more than a suffix, now I have there's a certain well-known posek in America who has, he says this all the time, that any girl who's lived on a college campus, we assume that she has a status of a zona. For this halakha, zona doesn't mean a prostitute. It means a woman who has slept with a non-Jew, and she can't marry a Kohen. And I spoke to him. I said, I was a campus rabbi. There is no assumption like that. There's no assumption like that. There are girls who, if you want to tell me that a girl who lived in a sorority house, maybe. But anybody who lived on campus, I know fine from girls who live on campus, I don't think it reaches that level. And to make a sweeping statement like that, I think is very
maybe not Justin Hopkins.
I asked my colleagues, you know, the party schools also, this generation, maybe next generation won't. They a lot of these girls still have their lines. Fewer than last generation, but it's hard to say that. So comes the Minchas Yitzchak over here, and he says, it's a weak Sveik Sveika, if you're holding in Sveik Sveika, but there's a concept in Halacha called Sveik Sveika, double doubt. Now, the optimal way to apply the double doubt is, I want to know about the character of this piece of meat or something, and there's two tzdadim to allow it. Two reasons to allow it. So I look at this and I say, is it kosher or not? Well, 50-50. And then there's another svara to say 50-50, and it's almost like now it's 25% chance. That's how the Rashba learns it, and statistics don't work perfectly. But basically, I have two reasons to mocker this. So he applies what's called a sveik sveika mishnei gufim, which is not ideal, that Cohen, Mr. Cohen, I have a suffix whether you're a Cohen, right? Now, is this a legitimate suffix, or it's just there's a chance that you're not a Cohen? He says, it's a suffix. Every Cohen nowadays does not have a Sav Yichus, and there's a doubt. Maybe it's only a 5% doubt, but there's a doubt. And then this woman comes, and she says, she was a Shvuya. Now, just because we have an assumption that something happened, it doesn't mean there isn't a bit of a suffix. Alone, we would paskin that we assume something happened. But says the Minchas Yitzchak, maybe even without the edict of the Nazis that this was against the law, right? Maybe we don't even need that. Because you have a suffix Kohen and a suffix Shvuya. You put, neither are great Sveikos. You put the two together and that's enough. But what I appreciate from these poskim is their starting point is we are going to make this happen. We are going to they've been through enough. We're going to find heterim, you know. And again, is the statement that you know when there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, you know. But there has to be a rabbinic will, and here there was a rabbinic will to allow these people to remarry. And it's you know, how weak it is, they're finding svaras, their gedolim, the Minchas Yitzchak, the Satmar Rav, the Mishnah Halachas, the Chalkas Yaakov, this was the approach. We are going to allow these women to remarry, and therefore...
Does Rav Moshe have anything to say about this?
Not that I found. Could be. So you put it all together. You have, maybe he's not a Kohen. Right? Maybe. Not. We're not going to, alone, we're not going to go with that. We assume he's a Kohen. But there's a bit of a suffix. Maybe she's not a Shvuya. And then, on top of that, the fact that it was against the law. Now, I don't know how many Germans, they were animals. They were barbarians. How many of them followed the law? Right? I don't know.
Germans always followed the law.
Did they?
I'm sure everything's decreed, everything's gone.
So could be. And remember, if this is a bit different, our heter to eat Chalav Yisrael, to eat Chalav Stam and treat it as Chalav Yisrael, according to Rav Moshe, is based on a law that if they would cheat... Now, somebody did research and told Rav Moshe, do you know, it's basically a slap on the wrist. And Rav Moshe said, it doesn't matter. It's against the law. It would hurt their business. You know, that's enough. Here, too, you're right. The Nazis were into following the law. So originally, the Minchas Yitzchak says, it's not the same case. Shvuya is Boko Haram, right? Barbarians take women captive, and we assume that happened. Here, that's not the case. That's not why they took them. They took them, they dehumanized them, they put them to work, they starved them. They were not the captives that are being discussed in the Mishnah and Gemara and Ksubas. That's his first answer, and that seems to be one of the more compelling answers. But then he adds in, I'm not sure why he feels the need to add in, he says, but you also have others, a sveik sveika. All shvuyas have a sveik. Maybe he's not a Kohen. It's another reason. The Chalkas Yaakov adds in, we have no edim. How do we know she went through the Holocaust? So, that again, I find that very weak, because it could be that she's marrying somebody who was with her. Right? They were all together. I know from my wife's grandmother, they were together in the DP camps. They had survived together. They joined up. They knew that they were a survivor. But he claims without two edim formally coming and testifying, then you don't have the sugya. Again, the Chalkas Yaakov's alone, he writes that at the end, but they're all trying to pile on reasons to be makel. And this is the Mishnah Halachos claims she's not begetter shvuya. The shvuya they were talking about was where one or two women were taken. He says here they were taken as a group. He says nira lechadesh de shvuya lo mikri ela kishenishbeis yechida achas o shtayim o shaba sone al bateim vehem bebeis yechidim daaz chayshin an shama bala baones o baratzon akol lefi ha'inyan. And then he says, but me'ata omer ani benashe didan shehuvu hebiu kulam legedos umisham nilkachu kulam yachad lahamachanos ula'olam hayu lameos yachad v'machanos gamken ben bayom ben balayla. And he was there. He was a childhood friend of Eli Wiesel, the Mishnah Halachos. Hayu harbe nashim yachad yotzim ubayim kayadu lemishayu b'machanos sheyatzu rak b'chabrusa grufin. Belaz, uba chazara begrupin, grupin ve'achlu yachad ve'yashnu bebarracks achas v'chol avodatam hayahar be'nashim yachad ke'agadna leka lamechash l'shum inyan. Okay, again, it doesn't mean that there isn't a chance that something happened, but what they're all trying to do is say this is not the same case that the Mishnah and the Gemara were speaking about, and again, it's very clear that they're obviously the halacha has to agree to this, but they're looking to find grounds to be mekel, and then to hear that a rabbi of today's generation would say, no, maybe we can question whether the grandfather was allowed to marry the grandmother because she was in the camps, right? And that way we can let the grandson marry whomever his heart desires and say that he's really a halal, is a terrible thing to do. It's a terrible thing to do. Besides the fact that this was the psak of the Gedolim, to call into questions all Kohanim who married survivors after the war is heartless, right? Even though you have this guy, I'm sorry, he wants to marry a Gioras. To just say he's not a Kohen, I'd be more comfortable with than to question all the Kohanim who married after the war and say that their wives were not allowed to marry them. But this is, you see the sensitivity on behalf of the Poskim. They are looking for reasons to allow them to marry, to stay married to their husbands, for those who were fortunate enough to survive with their husbands, and for those who weren't, to say, we're not going to say you can't marry a Kohen. The Kohanim can't marry anybody from the DP camps. And so just to summarize, you have a Mishnah in Ksubas Chafbez that says if a woman was taken captive, and we know she was taken captive, two Adam said she was taken captive, then we don't allow her to marry a Kohen, even if she says nothing happened. We have such a strong assumption about what happened, that she was raped, and a woman who is nivelas la'akum is not allowed to marry a Kohen. She can't marry a Kohen. That is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. The question then came up, what happened after the war when you had hundreds, thousands of cases of survivors who had been captured and now want to marry Kohanim? Right? Do you apply? The Mishnah says a shvuya. She was a captive. So come the poskim and come up with very creative solutions. To me, the most compelling is to say this isn't the case of Shibuya either, because that's not why they were taking them, or because they took them in groups. But beyond that, you have the Chalkas Yaakov developing a whole page via source sheets I'll show you to try to prove that according to the Nodabi Yehuda, you need two Edom to physically come and testify, right? Which didn't happen. To rely on this Sveika B'Shnei Gufim, which is very weak, but to me it shows what they're trying to do. We're trying to come up with five reasons. Nobody should feel like they're doing a B'Dievet. We want these Kohanim to marry after the war, right? And that's the sensitivity, and the Lumdus comes together, and you have Poskim from all over the map. They all come, and I didn't find any Machmirim in that generation until today, which I think is a misguided psak if it exists, who said that they can't marry Kohanim, or that they can't go return to their husbands.
If she says that she's based on and you believe her, mm-hmm. and then two Edom come and say that she was captured, so do we still stay with the Chazaka that we believed her, even though now that we have two Edom who came afterwards?
Did she get married yet? Or if she got married, for sure. We wouldn't.
We've converted to two Edom.
Correct.
So if she knows that there are Edom.
Because anyway, the Mishnah says, but let's say if the Edom come once she gets married, if the Edom come before she gets married, then we wouldn't allow her to get married.
So if she knows that there are Edom,
then she can stay married.
Then it would behoove her to come and testify now so that she can get married right now before the Edom come.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. In a case where we ask her, and going back to the girls living on college campus, I spoke to other poskim who agreed with me and said that unless if she dated a non-Jew, that would be different. And that was, to me, the most depressing part of being a campus rabbi, was seeing girls date, and boys, the interfaith dating, mm-hmm. which is just...
So another rabbi.
But then, you know, if a girl dates, you know, a non-Jew, that might be different. Just a girl lived on campus. There's no chazaka.
So he's with that rabbi. Was he cozy at all?
No.
Or he's still adamant.
No, he was adamant.
Well, what phase was?
I don't know.
Is there a recent system with this rabbi? Or,
I heard this 10 years ago or more. And then when I was a campus rabbi, I thought, let me make my own judgment call. I spoke to the people on other campuses, and nobody thought it was a chazaka, you know, or that of course it happened. It's not a great culture, you know, and there are certainly merits to, you know, going to a firm school or living at home and not living on campus, 100%. But to say that there's a chazaka, it's like nishbeis, right?
It's so
difficult. It's very extreme. And what are you doing? You're cutting to say she can't marry a kohen. You know, we accept it as a gzeres hakasuv.
Let me ask you your advice as far as having their daughter go to a college where away from home, so she has to stay on campus.
Right. Depends on the case. Depends on the kid. Depends on the case. Depends on the campus a lot.
University of Maryland.
You know, and depends on the alternatives. There's some campuses where it can be done, where there's a better environment. But it really depends. It's case by case. All things being equal, I think there's... There's a reason for the, you know, Stern and Malot and living at home, you know, are all, but it's not always possible, and not every campus is the same.
University of Wyoming is not
Maryland. All right. I'm sorry. Hopefully next week we'll have sources.